Welcome, everybody. My name is Sumit Mehrotra. I'm a program manager on the Windows Azure team, and we are here today to talk about something really, really exciting, which is Windows Azure Platform. Just a show of hands, how many of you already know a little bit about what Azure is? A fair number of you. Great. So what my goal is going to be today is just give you a run-through of what Windows Azure Platform is about and what Microsoft's, how it relates to Microsoft's cloud computing strategy. And the goal is essentially for you as an application developer or somebody who's thinking about moving an application or portions of your application to the cloud to take advantages that the cloud provides, to give you some context on what Microsoft's platform is all about and how you can leverage it and how it can add value to your applications. So, as I said, we're going to first run through some pieces of the Azure platform, very quickly get a lay of the land at a very high level. And then we're going to go and talk a little bit about what we think about as design principles for our platform, how we designed it and why we designed it in that way. And then we're going to dig a little deeper into each of the components that we have already seen and see how the pieces fit together and how each piece can be useful for your application. And at the end, we're going to do a brief where we are today and where we're going to be so that you sort of get a direction of where we are going with the platform. So just as a first thing that I want you to take a look at is this view of the platform, which you can consider as a sort of a 30,000-foot view of the platform. And one thing that I'd like you to take away, if you're taking away anything from this talk, is the thing at the bottom, which says essentially that Windows Azure Platform is a group of cloud-based technologies that provide very specific services for your application. And we're going to see what it means as we go along. But just to describe this view a little bit, what you see at the bottom are the four main components of Windows Azure Platform. Starting from the left, you see Windows Azure. Moving on is SQL Azure. And the third one is Windows Azure Platform App Fabric. I'm just going through the names right now. We're going to see what each of these are. And then the last one is Microsoft codename Dallas. So these are the four basic parts of the Windows Azure Platform. And then overarching, you'll see the developer experience. And the reason why I put it as an overarching theme is while designing the platform, we lay a great amount of emphasis on the development experience associated with for developers, application developers like you, who want to use these components as part of their applications. So our goal always has been to enable the skill sets that you already have to make sure that those skill sets are readily transferable to the cloud when you're using the platform. So there's an overarching theme of development experience because we lay a lot of emphasis across the platform on creating these seamless developer experiences. And we'll see a little bit of an example of what I'm talking about as we go through the presentation. So again, emphasizing that last sentence there, that's sort of the overarching theme of the platform. So just to get through a feel of what each of these components are, starting with Windows Azure, this is a development and service hosting platform that provides on-demand compute and storage capabilities to host large-scale, internet-scale applications inside Microsoft Data Center. Now, that's a mouthful, but that's essentially what I want to convey as we are flying through at the 15,000-foot level, just to give you a feel of what Windows Azure is. It's a hosting environment. It provides automatic service management for your service that's running inside Microsoft Data Center. So you as an application developer can focus more on writing your application versus doing the rest of the stuff associated with writing internet scale applications hosted inside somebody's data center. And we're going to talk about in detail what Windows Azure does and how it does. Moving on, we have SQL Azure. And as the name suggests, it's got something to do with databases. And you can guess that. And it's an extension of the SQL data platform. But the difference is that this is a service, a relational database service provided to you by the platform. So it's not just hosted SQL in the cloud, it's a service. And with the service comes the promise of high availability, scalability, and multi-tenancy, and so on and so forth. So think of it as your friendly neighborhood SQL, but it's taken care of by the cloud, and it's provided to you as a service. The third part of the platform, Windows Azure App Fabric, this is the component that is used to connect endpoints or federate endpoints of hybrid cloud application. And what I mean by hybrid cloud application is complex, maybe enterprise scale applications, portions of which are stored on, say, the Azure cloud. Portions of it may reside in your data center. Portions of it may reside even on your desktop. So how do you make sure that these things can communicate with each other? Windows Azure App Fabric provides you the capability to connect these different endpoints and make the whole application work as you want it to work. So that's App Fabric. And the last piece of the Windows Azure platform is something called Dallas. And this is basically an information discovery and brokerage system wherein there are interesting pieces of data out there, public or private. There are people who have lots of data that they want other people to use. You as application developer might be looking for some data, maybe, for example, census data, and do interesting things out of it. So this platform or this service, which is part of the Windows Azure platform, lets you consume those kinds of data and makes consumption and the production of this data very, very easy. And we'll see, and as we go along, we'll talk more about it. So again, coming back to this big picture, this was a 30,000 foot view of the platform. We had four components that we just ran through at sort of a 15,000 foot level, and the developer experience that is overarching. So just to give you a little bit of an example of what people are doing with Windows Azure platform, I want to take a minute or so to look at an application that a customer has built. And this application is called Eye on Earth. This has been built with collaboration with European Union Environmental Agency and Microsoft. And what this does is it's actually providing, as a customer, for people like you and me, is providing information about air pollution and water purity in different parts of European Union. So in case you got up today and were wondering whether the water is good enough to take a bath today, you could go to this website and check what's the water quality in Antwerp, for example. So just as an example, let's choose Antwerp here. You can see there are some 8 or 10 different sites which have data about water purity and air purity that is being pushed. And the reason why I chose this example is that it's a very good example of bringing together disparate pieces of technologies. I mean, as application developers, sometimes we tend to get hold up into, am I going to use Silverlight? Am I going to use mapping? Am I going to use Windows Azure? Am I going to use .NET framework? You get holed up in technologies. But if you look at an example of an application like this, it brings together things like Silverlight. It brings together mapping from Bing. It brings together pieces of Windows Azure platform. So the pieces of Windows Azure platform in play here are Windows Azure itself, which I said was the hosting environment. So this application is actually running on Windows Azure. It's running in one of Microsoft data centers. It's hosted there. And it's using SQL Azure for its data needs. So the data is actually coming from European Union repositories. They have this data already, but this application brings together that data and presents it to you in a very useful manner. So it's a good example of bringing together these building blocks of technology to provide some value to a customer. So moving on, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about sort of the big investment areas or design principles that we as the Windows Azure platform team at Microsoft have put a lot of emphasis on. So starting with fundamentals, I mean, these words that you see on the screen are fairly common words, and you have a good understanding of it. But just to reiterate, security is a very common thing. You as an application developer, you as an application owner, or a business owner who owns an application, would expect a level of security from a platform that you're using. And we lay a lot of emphasis on that across the platform. We have various level of application isolation built into the platform so that your application cannot be affected by somebody else doing something bad on the platform. So things like that. So we built a lot of layers of security. And the emphasis on that is because you as a customer would expect that. Availability is, again, a big investment area. Again, as I said, if you are a business owner running a business-critical application, for example, for your customers, you would expect your customers to be able to go to your application or a website 24/7, 365 days a year, and your application should be up there providing value to your customers. So here's where availability comes in. I mean, as a platform, we make sure, or the platform makes sure, that your application is serving your customers at all times. Scale out, we built this principle into the platform and the services that we ourselves build on top of the platform from day one. As an application developer, if you are in a situation where you're thinking about, I have 100 customers today and I expect to have 1,000, but lo and behold, a month later I have 1,000,000 customers, there are certain ways in which you can scale your application. You can buy big, beefier boxes, go out and purchase those boxes and have them service the extra customers that you're getting. Or the other option is you can build your application in such a way that your application has reusable components, each of which can be scaled out independently of the other one. So for example, if you have a front end and a back end, in a very simplistic example, and you're getting quite a lot of hits on your front end, you can actually farm out your front end a lot. Especially if it's built in a very reusable manner. And that's sort of the philosophy we've had in mind. You have your application which has different components. It's a distributed application. And as the needs of your application grow in terms of scale, you tell the platform to scale it, and it'll scale it automatically. So you don't have to put a lot of thought into it. And we'll see an example of it as we go along. We talk about cost a lot. I mean, there's lots of context on total cost of ownership in the industry, especially when it comes to cloud computing. But here, I'm just giving you a flavor of what our perspective is in terms of this platform providing value for your service in terms of cost. And there are three big things that I would like to touch upon. The first one is the abstraction. So the platform is there to provide a level of abstraction to you as an application developer. Traditionally, if as an application developer who's trying to develop a high-scale, business-critical application, for example, you've put a lot of effort and thought into things like, what hardware am I going to buy? What servers am I going to buy? What drives those servers are going to have? What routers need to be purchased, what switches need to be purchased, so on and so forth. You can see that's a very tedious job, right? So the platform essentially abstracts away all of that from you. So when you're thinking about your service, you're thinking about the actual value that the service provides instead of thinking about servers. When you're talking about data, you're talking about things like databases as opposed to where those databases are stored. So that's a level of abstraction that is provided to you. And what that does is essentially leaves you a lot of time and resources to spend on actually building your application and providing good value to your customers. So you're spending a lot of time there as opposed to thinking about those things that don't provide value for your customers. So that's where sort of the cost factor comes in. The other aspect of cost is shared resources. I mean, you're running on a platform, and there are a bunch of resources that are shared across the platform, across different services. So you are not taking decisions on buying dedicated pieces of hardware, 50 or 60% of which may be lying idle at any given point of time. So you don't, again, it comes back to abstraction as well. You're not thinking about these pieces of hardware that you buy for your service. You're thinking about resources that your application needs. So that's where, again, that's another parameter that goes into your cost calculations, and that's where Windows Azure Platform provides value to you. And the third big bullet is the development cost. So again, going back to the 30,000-foot view that I was referring to, you saw the development experience arching across the platform. And that's what we emphasize. We want to make your experience developing on Windows Azure Platform as seamless as possible. You have existing skill sets that you have been using for years. We want you to bring them over to Windows Azure Platform. And what this does in terms of cost to you is that you don't have to learn new things. You don't have to learn an entire new framework or a language. Those things that you already knew keep on working. So what it does is, it reduces your development costs. It reduces the barrier for you to write applications on Windows Azure. And it also reduces your maintenance costs. You're writing the same familiar things. You're not learning anything new. So your maintenance costs in the long run also go down. So that's where sort of, just to give you an example of what parameters that go into cost and why it can help reduce cost for you as you're writing applications on Windows Azure. Better Together, that's a piece that we focused on just because this is a platform. And I said there are four pieces to the platform. And these are four pieces in the picture, but inherently they work together. So we have been very conscientious in making sure that when you use pieces of the platform to write your application, when you go to deploy your application, you have a very coherent experience deploying your application. When you go to manage your application that is running on Windows Azure Platform, you have a very coherent experience doing that. So you have a single view where you can see what databases you're using, what services you're running, how many instances of each service that you're running, what are the endpoints, what are your certificates, so on and so forth. And I'm throwing out words here because I don't have time in this presentation to go into details of all of that, but you'll get a brief look at what it is as I go into the next demo. But that's just to give you an idea to get started. Everything is built together, everything can be deployed together, managed together, so that you don't have to go to different places and you don't have to make that jump when you're using pieces of the platform. And coming to interoperability, again, a very important design choice that we made while designing the platform. As I said, developer experience is key. We want to embrace as many developers as possible, coming from as varied backgrounds as possible. So the services, the platform services themselves that you saw, be it Windows Azure, be it SQL Azure, be it Windows Azure App Fabric, those are open services. So most of them you can hit using REST calls. So it doesn't matter whether you are a .NET developer or a native code developer or a PHP developer, so on and so forth. All those are open to you as application developers. And when your application, when you're thinking about your application actually running on Windows Azure Platform, any framework that is supported today by Windows is essentially supported by Windows Azure Platform. So again, it's not a closed system which says if only if you're a .NET developer, you're welcome on Windows Azure Platform. It's any framework that you're used to on Windows, you can bring forth those skill sets on Windows Azure Platform. So now let me take a sort of a deeper dive into pieces of the platform that we have just been talking about. So first and foremost, this picture you've seen, Windows Azure. And there are three portions to Windows Azure that we'll go through. There is a compute part, there is a storage part, and there is service management. So going to the compute part, which we call application hosting, what it is, what Windows Azure provides you is the capability to host and run your application in a very seamless fashion. And the platform itself takes care of abstracting away the hardware that I said earlier. So things like today, if you're running in a data center, your application has to be aware or fault tolerant, for example, to things like, well, if a server goes down, what do I do? If a hard drive burns out, what do I do? If a cable melts away, what do I do? If one of my racks in my data center loses power, what do I do? Those things are taken care of by the platform automatically. All you tell the platform is, here are my resource needs. Here's what my application looks like. And we're going to see how you define an application in Windows Azure. But here, you define an application, you tell the platform, here's my application, and the platform says, you have these resources, I'm guaranteeing you these resources will be available to you, regardless of what happens, any fires in the data center or whatever happens, your resources are going to be there. So that's what you do. So that picture essentially is explaining that. So this is a very conceptual view of an application, a very traditional front end and a traditional back end, and you have a front end being exposed to the outside world through a load balancer, which people can hit, and a load balancer, and internally they are talking to each other, the front end and the back end are talking to each other, and the back end may be talking to some other service which is outside outside the purview of this service itself. So a very classical view of a service, and this is essentially how you define. I mean, if you understand this picture, you can define your application for Windows Azure. So as you define this application, Windows Azure takes care of maintaining and running this this service that you define. And apart from just defining the service, everything else that you code around, all the other code that you write, is standard languages and standard APIs that I was just talking about a minute ago. Anything that you're used to, any framework that is familiar to you that is supported by Windows is fair game for writing this application. So let's take a quick look. I've been talking a lot about how easy it is and how interoperable it is. Let's take a quick example of how you actually code up a Windows Azure application. So here, what I have is Visual Studio, and all I have done on this machine is get the Windows Azure SDK installed on it. Along with Windows Azure SDK, there is a set of integration points with Visual Studio. So again, if you're a developer highly used to Visual Studio, this is an environment that is pre-baked to write Windows Azure applications. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to instantiate a new project. And as I create a new project, this dialog comes up where you see under Visual C#, you have a cloud project. So Visual Studio knows about Windows Azure. If you go and click on Windows Azure Cloud Service and say OK, Visual Studio is going to churn through its motion and start creating this project. What you see here is a set of pre-baked templates that we have put inside Visual Studio, which let you define your Windows Azure application using standard constructs that you're currently familiar with. For example, you have the standard ASP.NET front-end role. And you see the terminology web role here, and you see the terminology worker role here. Those are terminologies that we use in Windows Azure land, but simplistically, you can consider them to map to your traditional sense of a front-end and a back-end, or a front-end and any other portion component of your service. So this ASP.NET web role is a front-end that is being built on ASP.NET. And the worker role can be built on anything that you want to. So let's, for kicks, put in two of these guys. I have a front-end role for my service, and I have a back-end role for my service. I'm going to say OK. So the default solution that is created for you sets up a lot of things that I'm going to show you once it's done. All right, so what you see here is Visual Studio has created a few things in here. Web role corresponds to the web role that we just added to our solution. And this is nothing but a web application, a traditional web application that you have been used to already. It's just that it's glued together in such a way that Visual Studio knows that it is a Windows Azure application. And the worker role is nothing but a class library. And the glue that I refer to comes from this project over here, which is called Cloud Service 2. And what it has is a couple of interesting things that I'd like to spend a minute on. The first thing in here is called the service definition file. And what you see here is a very simple XML schema. I mean, it's a new schema, yeah. As a developer, you must be thinking, OK, I got to learn another new schema. But trust me, if you know how to understand a picture that I just showed you a couple of slides back, which are traditional front end, back end, things talking to each other, things talking to the outside world. If you know what that picture looks like, this is exactly what it is. It's just a declarative way for you to define that picture and tell the platform, here's what the topology of my application looks like. So a couple of interesting things in here. You see the web role that I created. It's automatically created with an HTTP endpoint, which the outside world can hit your service on. It's protocol HTTP, port 80, standard things. And a worker role, which essentially currently doesn't have anything. The other stuff that you see here, I'd like you to sort of ignore that for a moment. These are helpful things that have been put there by Visual Studio as part of building this application, and these are useful as you dig deeper into Windows Azure. And if you're interested, you can come to my talk tomorrow on Windows Azure itself, and we're going to talk about those things. But for now, just it's a simple XML schema, which is defining a web role, a worker role. That's about it. The second interesting piece that Visual Studio has put in here is called, is called the configuration file. So you looked at the definition which defines your service. So as a developer or an architect, this is what you do. You define your service and write code, of course, for it. Configuration file are, consider them to be runtime inputs to your application. And these are traditionally, we think of them in terms of an IT persona, where somebody has used what the service that you wrote and is deploying to production. And at that runtime, for that environment, you want certain different parameters for your service. And things, interesting things in here, in this default template, is this instance count. Now, this configuration value is telling the platform that for the web role, I want one of those instances to be active. And same for the worker role. So you see instance count one here for that as well. That's a default configuration that has been put in. You can put as many different configurations, runtime configurations that you want in this configuration file for your service. But simplistically, that's what you get when you create a new solution. And this instance count, we're going to see an example of it in a little while, is very useful. This is the unit of scale. So if your application suddenly became very popular and you needed more of your front-end roles, all you have to tell Windows Azure is, go increase the instance count for my web roles from 1 to 10 or whatever. And the platform is going to take care of making sure those resources are available to you. So that's essentially what the solution looks like. You've got a classic web application, you got a class library, and that's your Windows Azure application, a very simple Windows Azure application. And I've done nothing, I haven't added any piece of code up till now. What I'm going to do is I'm going to be a lazy developer, and I'm going to add the traditional hello world here. And I'm going to say, that's it. I just added a few strings in the default ASPX. And let's see what happens. So as soon as I hit F5, now, you have to, I'd like you to pay attention here. I kept harping upon the fact that development experience is key for us. Windows Azure application development is tied into the VS development experience in such a way that even F5, what you're used to in terms of debugging, is the same. So as soon as you hit F5, you'll see a few things happening. On the lower left, you see build has started. So Visual Studio knows how to build a Windows Azure application, which is nothing more than calling the C# compiler or whichever compiler that your application is using, calling it, making sure it's compiled, gluing together using the portions that I just showed you, packaging that project, packaging your service, and deploying it. Now, where does it get deployed on your desktop? So that's where the interesting things are. So I think we missed what Visual Studio was saying while I was talking. But essentially, what has happened is there are two simulation environments that Windows Azure SDK provides to you as a developer of Azure applications. One of them is called Development Fabric, which is the simulation of the compute environment in the cloud. So that lets you host applications that you're developing on your desktop. It lets you host those applications on your desktop and see it running in an Azure-like environment. And the other simulation environment is for the storage piece of it. And we're going to talk about storage in a little while. But it provides you a simulation of the Windows Azure storage service on your desktop. So you have everything that you need on your desktop to write and debug a Windows Azure application. So what has happened while we were talking is that automatically as part of F5, VS has opened up IE and hit the endpoint that you described for your service. You described an endpoint, HTTP endpoint on port 80 for your service, and it's hitting that endpoint and bringing up what your application looks like, and this is what I had written. So let's take a look at what's happening in the simulation environment. So this is the development fabric, the simulation for the compute part of it in the cloud. And you see here that this is your service that has been deployed. You've got a web role, you've got a worker role, and you've got one instance of each. And it provides you a nice console view while you're debugging your application, while you're developing, going through the iterative process. It gives you a nice console view of what's happening. And things like if you have debug statements or log statements or trace statements in your application, those show up here as you're debugging. And this is a complete simulation of the compute environment in the cloud. So the same kind of things that you your application would experience in the cloud is happening on your desktop over here. So your application is running fine. Now, I had mentioned the instance count portion of it. So let's see, how do I increase the instance count? So just in the purview of still being in on the desktop before going to the cloud, let's say I wanted to increase the instance count because I wanted to simulate multiple instances because I wanted to shake out some concurrency bugs or whatever. So I increased the instance count of web roles to 2. That's all I did. And I'm going to start up my debugging again. I hit F5 again. And we'll see what happens to your service. So it's getting deployed. And now you see 2 instances of your web role running. And both of them are working happily. They're being initialized right now, and they're running right now. So that's the ease of scaling that Windows Azure platform provides. Now the next step, you're happy with your application. You've shaken out all the bugs. There are no bugs. As developers, we know we never write bugs. There are no bugs in our applications. So you're ready to go to the cloud. Now, Visual Studio makes it easy. All you have to do is you have to right-click on the cloud service project and say publish. And what it does is packages up your application so that in a format that can be deployed to the Windows Azure cloud. So that's done. And once it's done, it'll open up the developer portal. This is where you go to deploy your application. And I'm going to come right here. So this is what the developer portal looks like. Remember, I was talking about service management as a piece that is provided for you by the platform. This is where you go and manage your application, manage portions of your application. So you can see on the left, I have Windows Azure portion, which has storage, which has services. I have a bunch of services already running. And I have SQL Azure, which is wherein you can go and manage your database in the cloud. And you have App Fabric, which lets you manage the App Fabric portions of your application. So those are the resources available all at one place. So this is one way in which you can manage your application. The other way, of course, being developers, you'd like access to APIs. All of these things are available through APIs as well, and these are standard REST APIs. So what you see here, I'd like to come back to the demo that we were on. What you see here is I've already deployed this application that I just showed you before coming here onto one of the locations that we support throughout the world. So this application is currently deployed. The application that I just showed you is deployed in a data center in Western Europe. So it's running there. And what Windows Azure has done is showing you that, hey, you have a worker role and a web role. They are ready for action. And it's showing you the endpoint that has been allotted to you. So remember, when we did F5, the simulation environment on the desktop was hosting your service on localhost, 127.0.0.1, and hitting that. Now, Windows Azure, when it deployed, it set up all the connections, and it set up the load balancer for your web front end, and it gave you an internet-facing web internet-facing endpoint, which is available to you here, which is called, and this is my service name, and then cloudapp.net is standard domain name that all applications on Windows Azure get. If you click here, this is an application that is running live on the cloud right now. And here you go. You can see I'm not faking this page again because you can see the URL here. And it's open to the internet. If you have connectivity right now, you can go and hit this URL and get this fancy page yourself. Okay, and we talked about the scaling portion of it. Scaling a real world application that is running live is, again, as easy as you did on the desktop. All you have to do is go and look at the configuration file and change the number of instances here. That's all you do. And depending on the amount of traffic you're getting, you have a one-step solution to go and manage your service to address the number of customers that you're getting. So that's all I did. I changed the number of instances of web role, and it's going to take a few minutes, and it's come up with another instance. So let's leave that for a while, and let's get back to what we were talking about. So you saw the compute portion of Windows Azure. The second portion, and you saw the service management portion of Windows Azure, which was that developer portal, and it lets you do things like scale your application. It manages upgrades to your service. You have a new version of your service. You can go ahead and deploy that service, and there are different models that are supported. You can go ahead and deploy the existing, upgrade the existing service, or you can bring up your new service alongside the older service and do a 10-second swap so that your customers don't see the difference when you make the switch from version 1 of your service to version 2 of your service. And I can talk to you more in detail if you're interested about it offline. I'm going to talk about it tomorrow as well. So that's service management. And as I said, it's available through REST APIs. You as developers would be happy to code up against these REST APIs using the language of your choice. And the third portion of Windows Azure was Windows Azure Storage. This is the storage service which is built for reliability and scale. It's available all the time. The data is guaranteed to be there. The data that you put on the storage service is guaranteed to be there, and it operates at massive scale. And what I mean by massive scale is evident in the things that you see up on the screen. For you as a developer, there are a few abstractions of storage abstractions that are available to you as part of this service, which you're already familiar with. So the first one is Blobs, which is traditionally used for storing unstructured data, things like files or videos or music or whatever you want, unstructured file-based data, which tends to be large. So you can store that as blobs. And you can, and a blob on Windows Azure Storage can be as big as 200 gigabytes. The other abstraction is queues, which are highly reliable message passing queues, which fit into your application model in terms of providing asynchronous communication mechanism, reliable asynchronous communication mechanism between portions of your application. So remember, we had a web role and a worker role in my test application. If I wanted to communicate between them, one of my choices would have been using queues. My web role puts a message into my queue, and my worker role picks up the message and parses and does some processing on it. The third abstraction is tables, and these are especially used for structured data. And Windows Azure Storage is built for, again, storing at scale. So these tables can support billions upon billions of rows of structured data. The difference between tables here and SQL Azure is essentially the difference between simple structured storage built for scale versus a structured storage built for relational capabilities. And we're going to talk about SQL Azure in a bit. But that's sort of your choices as an application developer on Windows Azure platform. If you're thinking about structured data, but you're thinking about reliability and scale, Windows Azure storage is probably something to look at. And if you're talking about relational capabilities, rich relational capabilities, then you're talking about SQL Azure. And the fourth abstraction for Windows Azure is drives. So these are new things that we introduced a few months back. These are, you can consider them to be virtual drives, virtual hard drives, which let you, and these are durable, so they let you store data indefinitely. And these drives can be mounted by components of your application, and you can access and store and update data using standard Windows file system APIs. This is an NTFS formatted disk that is available to you, and this is a virtual disk, so any portion of your application can access it. So blobs, queues, tables, and drives, those are the four abstractions for Windows Azure storage that are available to you, and as an application developer, all of these are available to you in terms of REST APIs. So again, you choose your favorite language, and you build applications accessing storage. As part of Windows Azure SDK, we do ship a .NET client library, but there are libraries out there which PHP developers use, which Python developers use, which Java developers use. So language is your choice, and the platform lets you do whatever you want. So we've talked about Windows Azure. The other big piece for the platform is SQL Azure. And we referred to it a few minutes back. This is the relational database provided as a service. Again, I should emphasize this is not hosted SQL or a hosted database somewhere, but it's a service which is built for scale and availability. So you don't have to think about where do I go and buy my server and put SQL on it and sort of set SQL up for scale. All you do is go to the portal that I just showed you. You create your database, and off you go. All you need is a connection string, which is a standard connection string. It supports the TDS protocol and T-SQL, so everything that you're familiar with on SQL is available to you on SQL Azure. And it's built on SQL Server technology, so any existing pieces of code that you have work well with SQL Azure. And as you dig deeper, you'll find different things that are available and as the platform evolves. But essentially, it's the SQL that you love, that you have been loving for years, but it takes away the pain of actually managing a SQL server. All you do as an application developer is know that I have a SQL database somewhere that I can hit all the time, and the data is guaranteed to be there. And the other big portion of it is you pay for what you use. It's true for all of the platform, in fact, but especially true for databases. You don't have to set up spare capacity, for example. As you're using, the amount that you pay depends on how much of data you're storing on it. The third big portion of Windows Azure platform, App Fabric, and as we talked about, this is the component of the platform which glues together portions of your hybrid applications in the cloud. One part of App Fabric is called the Service Bus, which is the component that actually does this gluing. So it takes endpoints of your application which may be sitting across disparate networks. They may be sitting behind firewalls, and it lets you communicate between these different portions of your application in a secure manner. And the way it does this, that it provides the security, is using the other component of App Fabric, which is called access control. And this is a claims-based access control mechanism for REST web services. It supports ADFS now. It supports RAP and SWT. And this is the portion. This is the security mechanism that is used by Service Bus to secure the channel of communication that it sets up between portions of your application, which may be sitting behind your corporate firewall, and one portion may be sitting in Windows Azure itself, halfway around the globe, for example. And as we go along, we keep talking about the different portions of the platform, but these portions of the platform themselves are built on top of each other. So, for example, Service Bus itself is used by the fourth component, which is Dallas, which we're going to talk about, which is here. So Dallas, the last but not least fourth component of Windows Azure Platform, is essentially an information and discovery mechanism that lets you as an application developer discover interesting pieces of data. For example, you have the census data, or for example, FBI has this data about crime statistics in cities in the United States. Anybody going to the United States in the foreseeable future? Nobody likes the United States? Awesome. But in case you're interested in going there someday, and you were interested in looking at the cities that your friends are in, and you wanted to know whether you should actually visit that friend in that particular city because you don't know what the crime situation is, you could, for example, look at this application, which is a Facebook application. Let's hope it works, because it wasn't working a few minutes back. Now all of you will know my password. Oh, it's not working for some reason. I can assure you it was working yesterday. But essentially, I mean, you can take down this URL, and in case you're interested in going to the US, you can look at this application. But this is a Facebook application that is actually running on Windows Azure, and it is using Dallas as a source of data, and the data it's picking up is FBI data. FBI has this public data, FBI in the United States, has this public data which is available as text files about crime situation in different cities in the United States. And this Facebook app essentially munges that data along with the cities that your friends are in, and it shows you a listing of what's the burglary rate in Chicago, for example, or what's the murder rate in Houston, for example. And if you wanted to visit some of these cities, you'll get a feel of what this is. But apart from being an interesting little app, the cool thing with this app is that, A, it's running on Windows Azure. B, it's a Facebook application that's integrated with another application that exists. And C, it is using information that is being provided by Dallas. And again, reiterating what Dallas lets you do is it lets the consumers of data, like application developers like you and me, to pull in this data, and it provides interesting things like, if you wanted this FBI data, even pop out C# classes for you to consume that data. And for people like FBI or other people who have public data that they want other application developers to use and do interesting stuff with, it lets them actually publish that data onto this service. So it's a service that brokers information providers and information consumers. So we've gone through a little bit in depth on the four pieces of Windows Azure Platform, and we are at a point where we can talk about a little bit about where we are going. But before we go there, just to reiterate some of the things that may or may not have been evident as I was talking, what you pay for the platform is based on what you use. So for example, if you're running a Windows Azure application, what you pay for running that application is based on the number of hours you have been running your application, the number of instances you have been running, the amount of data you have stored on the platform, the amount of transactions you have done with the system, or the amount of traffic that for your service that has left the data center that your service is running on, the size of your SQL Azure database, for example, the number of messages that you have passed across using App Fabric, for example. So those are the metrics, very simple metrics to understand. And again, you're paying based on the usage of those metrics. There are other billing mechanisms that are also possible, and I'm not going into depth here, but I'll be more than happy to talk about those or point you to in the right direction if you're interested. But essentially, you as a developer, you're paying for what you use. You're not reserving capacity, or you're not wasting resources. In terms of SLA, we talked about availability in the past. a few minutes back. We provide three nines or better in terms of availability for our services across the platform. And as a developer, and more so as a person who is running a business critical application or an application that is critical for your business, you want your consumers to have access to your service always. That's where availability comes in. But as a developer, you want to make sure that the platform can support you and your needs in case something goes wrong. So we have an extensive system of support for different portions of the platform. We have a 24/7 phone support capability. We have extensive developer forums for all portions of the platform, and they are pretty active. I mean, not a day goes by where I don't see like messages popping up every 10 minutes or so. So it's a very active community, and I'd encourage, if you're not already part of that community, just jump in, see what's going on, and how people are using the platform today. And in terms of our spread across the world, it's not just a service that is based in the US. We exist in three regions now, US, Europe, and Asia. We are available in 21 countries as we speak, and you can pay in 11 currencies if you wanted to. And we are spreading as we speak as well. In 2010, we'll have spread to more regions, and you'll have more access points available to you. And just a quick description of where we are going. This is sort of a wordy slide which shows you where different portions of our investments are. But some of the key highlights that I'd like to point out are .NET Framework 4. We'll have support for it fairly soon. So you can write your favorite .NET 4 applications for Windows Azure platform. We're investing a lot on improving the compatibility between your applications that run today in your own data centers and between cloud-based applications that you may have been planning for your business. We're investing a lot in sort of service management. We saw portions of it as when we were walking through the developer portal and the APIs associated with it. We are bringing together a lot of other things that you're used to. Remember, we talked about existing skill sets. So things like System Center and APIs associated with it, we're investing a lot in bringing together technologies that you already know from the Microsoft stack and bringing them together so you can use them across Windows Azure platform itself. There are larger databases coming for SQL Azure, and there'll be more pricing models, as I referred to earlier. There'll be more pricing models coming in, and we're going to spread our availability across the globe even more as the year goes by. Some resources for you to use. I've pointed to the forums that I just discussed and the developer portal and the developer page. That's your one-stop page to get started on Windows Azure platform. Go there, download the SDKs. There are white papers to read. Get started. Write your first application if you have not already done it, and you can see how easy is it to get your application up and running. So now to the interesting part, question and answers. I think I'm done with what I wanted to convey. I'll be interested in knowing what questions you have. Yes, please. Okay, so the question is, what does scalability mean, and why do I have to scale my application on Windows Azure and not on SQL Azure? So those are two different questions. I'll address the first one first, which is, what does scalability mean? So remember, we were talking about describing your application in Windows Azure in a traditional sense. You have a front-end role, you have a back-end role. And those are essentially your units of scale. So you have designed your application. A distributed application is traditionally designed in such a way that it's fault tolerant and it's got all the nice things about it. If one portion of it goes down, you can recover based on whatever state is in the system. So in that traditional model, if, for example, you're seeing your web front end, you're monitoring your web front end, and I did not talk about how you monitor things on the Windows Azure. I'm going to touch upon it a little bit in tomorrow's talk on Windows Azure. But say, for example, you're looking at your service, and you're monitoring, for example, ASP.NET web requests coming to your front end roles in terms of performance counters. So you're looking at those performance counters, and you're seeing a heavy load on your front ends. So if you have a tool, for example, hypothetically speaking, that was looking at that thing outside the cloud, it was looking at what the state of your web front ends is, and it saw that you had three of those guys running, and you're getting 100% utilization there, and you're getting lots of drop requests. You could take a decision on adding one more or two more or 10 more of those web roles, right? That's the unit of scale. So your code remains the same, but instead of having three of those identical pieces running, you have 10 of those things running. So your tool that is running and monitoring this decides that you need more. It can go to the service management APIs that we just talked about, which let you manage your application. It tells the service management API, hey, spin up 7 more instances of my web role. And then those things spin up, and your application, and you keep on monitoring your performance counters, and you see your load being spread across 10 of those things, and you can service more of your customers with less requests dropped. So that's sort of the how and why of scalability. Now, to the other part of the question, which was why scalability on Windows Azure versus versus SQL Azure, I'd say Windows Azure is the compute part of the platform, which is essentially letting you host your application, and SQL Azure is another component which essentially provides you an endpoint to your SQL database. You don't have to worry about whether your database is scaled across, whether it's available, whether it's up all the time or not. The platform gives you, very simplistically, an endpoint to hit. Here's your SQL database. Here's the server name. Go hit it. Here's your database. You have the connection string. You put your connection string in your service. That's it. You don't have to worry about, what if 10 of my servers go down that are hosting SQL Azure? Nothing of that sort. It's just an endpoint. You hit it. You transact using T-SQL. That's about it, traditional SQL programming. So the essential portion of scalability, the difference, I think, what you're referring to is you're talking about your application itself versus your database. So SQL Azure provides value in terms of not having to worry about scalability of your database itself. If you want a 1 gigabyte database or a 10 gigabyte database, it's there for you. That's it. You don't have to worry about that. Now, coming to your service, you have to worry about how your service is being utilized, how many customers you're getting for your service. And based on those things, you can scale up and down your service. And again, remember, scaling up and down provides you the capability of not having to reserve capacity ahead of time. You don't have to have 100 servers sitting idle when you have 100 users. You can have one front end when you have 100 users, and you can scale up to 50 of those front ends if you have 1 million users coming in tomorrow. Right? So that's the essential difference. Can I answer your question? I actually can't see beyond those lights, so you have to, yeah, just please. For SQL Azure? That's a good question. I'll have to take that offline and point you to the right person. So if you can send me an email, I'll leave my cards here. If you can send me an email, I can point you to the right person. Yes, please. So the answer would be, so my answer would be very short and cryptic, which is yes, the SQL Azure platform is going to get enhanced with capabilities that you already have on SQL Server. But the specifics and the timeline, I'll have to refer you to to an expert on SQL Azure. And again, if you can send me an email, I can connect you to the right people. It's traditional SQL Server. I don't know the exact SKU of SQL, but it is the same feature sets that you're used to on SQL Server itself. Those are being provided in a gradual manner. There are certain capabilities that are there today. There are certain capabilities that are being built as we go along. But think of this as a SQL Server, which is already hosted for you and managed for you. So the management portion is being taken up by the platform. The feature sets would remain the same, essentially, that you're used to as a SQL developer. But if you're interested in like specific features that are available today, not available today, send me an email. I can get you the information. Any more questions? Yes, please. No, so Windows Azure Platform is in production today. And it's a commercial platform. It has been a commercial platform starting February of this year. So we have already started charging people money. We were in CTV phase for over a year, starting at 2008. But now it's a commercial platform. And we're going to support technologies, Microsoft technologies, as they come around. And going to back to the point which I mentioned, which is any framework that is available on Windows is fair game on the platform. .NET 4 is due to come out soon in RTM format. And as it comes out, soon after that, we'll start supporting .NET 4 development as well on Windows Azure. Yes, please. Yeah, that's so backup and restore data, that's the question. I think gentlemen here also asked the same question. And again, if you can email me, I can get you the exact specifics on backup and restore. You're talking specifically about SQL Azure, right? Not the Windows Azure storage part of it. So for both, I mean, send me an email, I can get you the specific, because the answer is a little different for both of them. Yes, please. Yes. So the question is it necessary to write a new application, new Windows Azure application, or you can convert an existing application? And my answer would be a qualified yes today. There are ways in which you can convert an existing web application today, and that's essentially how these templates are created. I mean, if you dig into these templates, these are web applications that we have added a few lines of glue code in order to for them to sort of be integrated into Windows Azure application. But the mechanism of right-clicking and converting it into Windows Azure application, I'd say it is possible, and we'll make that possible soon. Yes, please. Yes. Sorry, can you repeat the question? Oh, yes. So I believe the question is the billing is based on usage. And the question is, can you follow the bill as you go along on a day-to-day basis so that you don't have a nasty surprise at the end of the month? And the answer is yes. So the developer portal that I was just showing you, that has a billing portion to it. So you can actually go and look at your bill at any point of time, and it'll show you line by line the amount that you have been charged for each resource usage. So it's a very exhaustive bill. You can look at it any point of time. And we actually have, I believe, we asked you for the credit card information. We have a credit limit as well on it. So as you go to that credit limit, you'll get some notification from us, and somebody will contact you. Yes, please. What about ownership of data? Yeah, so the question is, can once you store data in Windows Azure platform, can you get it back at any point of time? The answer is yes. You put data and get data using standard REST calls. So your account is your account, and you control your account. If you're in Windows Azure storage or you're using SQL Azure, you are the owner of your account and your data. And at any point of time, you can put in more data or remove all of that data. It's up to you as a user. Does that answer your question? Yes, please. So that's a very good question. The question is, in some countries, there are laws or regulations that govern where the data is physically stored. The answer is yes, we are highly aware of that fact. And that is one of the reasons why we have data centers now in two places in Europe, because there are certain European regulations. I am not an expert on it. But I believe that there are regulations for the European Union itself, and there are regulations for individual countries as well. And data retention is one of the big things that we are trying to address as we expand. And based on those regulations and based on sort of our roadmap, we're going to address those things in terms of sort of how compliant we are with different regulations in different regions in different parts of the world. And if you want specifics, again, email me and I can let you know the specifics for a country. Yes, please. You mean the same application? So the question is, does App Fabric support hosting the same application in different regions of the world? Moving the application itself or moving your customers? So can you define your performance metrics a little bit so I can? Yeah. Right. So thank you for explaining that a little more. The question is, can the application itself be hosted, same application can be hosted in different parts of the world, and can it be automatically moved from one portion of the world to another depending on your user's need? The answer to that is, today you can host your application wherever Windows Azure is available. The automatic part of it is under your control. The platform doesn't have a view on what the metrics of your performance are. I mean, that's a simple metric that you just described, but the platform today does not have a view or a way of describing performance metrics. So it doesn't support automatically moving it, but there's nothing stopping you from coming up with a design, which again, as I was explaining earlier to a gentleman here, you can monitor your application and see how it's doing in one part of the world. And if you're seeing 90% of your clientele coming from Far East, and your application is deployed in Western Europe, you're better served moving your application to a location in Asia. And you can actually do that using service management APIs. So if you have your application running in Western Europe, you're seeing only a few customers hitting it from Western Europe, you can scale down your application in Western Europe, spin it up in Asia. You can deploy your application in Asia. And all this can be done in a very automated fashion by a simple tool that is running on your side. And I'm trying to design things on the fly here, so pardon my designs. That's another good question. So the question is, would you be able to synchronize data between the two regions? Today, there is no synchronization mechanism available. But there's nothing stopping you from building that because everything is open APIs. So you can build, again, a tool that does that. But, yeah, I see the point that there are big challenges to that, especially if you have terabytes of information stored up in one portion of the world. That can be a challenge for the design that I just did on the fly. Any more questions? All right, thank you very much for listening to me.